and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the death of two inmates at Westville Correctional Facility. Justin Hicks reports Indiana legal groups are taking the state to court over its decision to end federal unemployment benefits. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Hammond Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr. about the upcoming Festival of the Lakes. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana State Correction officials say authorities are investigating the recent deaths of two inmates at Westville Correctional Facility. 39-year-old Richard L. Canada died Wednesday, while 36-year-old Daniel R. Todd died May 29th at the prison. Department of Corrections spokeswoman Annie Goler says state police are leading the investigation into Canada's death, while the completion of an investigation into Todd's death was pending toxicology results. The Times reports, Goler says, neither of the deaths are being investigated as a homicide.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The charges against Ethel Shelton, a former executive secretary for former Calumet Township trustee Mary Elgin, were formally dismissed Tuesday, ending an odyssey that began more than 6 years ago. In December 2014, Shelton was named in a multi-count indictment along with Elgin, Elgin's son, Stephen Hunter, and Alex Wooler, alleging the four committed conspiracy to defraud, wire fraud, conspiracy to commit honest service fraud, and conspiracy to commit extortion. Wooler was found not guilty by a jury in April 2018. The Post Tribune reports Shelton sought a mistrial during her 2018 case, saying that when Stafford Garbutt, a former township employee and informant for the FBI, went into her office to gather documents for the FBI, the search was illegal. According to court documents, the documents that Garbutt took were used for a search warrant at the Calumet Township office. The judge denied Shelton's request for a mistrial in June 2018, saying that her argument that an FBI informant illegally gained access to documents in her office did not invalidate the charge. On May 14th, the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit reversed the district court's decision in the case, stating the district court erred when it found Shelton lacked any reasonable expectation of privacy in her office. Garbutt's process of collecting documents supervised by the FBI violated Shelton's Fourth Amendment rights. With the case dismissed, Shelton said she's thankful and grateful to her attorney and her family and friends for supporting and praying for her.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Four police officers in Muncie have been indicted on more federal charges for using excessive force on arrestees and covering up the 2018 incidents. They now face federal trials. In March of last year, officers Chase Winkle and Jeremy Gibson and Sergeant Joseph Kresha were indicted on 12 total federal counts. 17 additional federal counts were added, and another officer, Corey Posey, was charged. The charges stem from instances in 2018 where people the officers arrested suffered serious injuries. The officer with the most charges against him is Chase Winkle. According to the FBI investigation that led to the incident, Winkle kicked, punched, used knee strikes and a taser on several arrestees without justification. At the time of these arrests, Winkle's father, Joe Winkle, was a police chief. Chase Winkle has also served at times as a public face of the force as a public information officer. Officer Posey was added to the federal indictment, and federal investigators say he wrote a false report minimizing Winkle's use of force. In a statement, current Muncie Police Chief Nathan Sloan says the department continues to focus on community engagement, police revision, officer accountability, and continuing education and training for officers.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana legal groups are taking the state to court over its decision to end federal unemployment benefits. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports they say the state is violating its own law, which says it must give citizens all rights and benefits of federal laws.
Plaintiffs include the concerned clergy of Indianapolis and several Hoosiers affected by the state's decision. In court documents, several say lack of child care or ongoing quarantines mean they'll likely be evicted without federal benefits. Department of Workforce Development data shows the end of federal benefits would impact around 160,000 Hoosiers, with almost 80% of them losing all unemployment benefits. Jennifer Terry of Indiana Legal Services is an attorney representing plaintiffs. She says they're also asking the judge for an injunction that would temporarily halt the state's ability to end federal benefits.
At this point, we don't know when that hearing on the preliminary injunction might occur, but we hope that it will happen fast.
Unless that happens, all federal unemployment benefits related to the pandemic will end this Sunday. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Communities are weighing what COVID-19 health and safety measures to continue this summer and into the fall. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, while school boards figure out next steps for their buildings, schools are pushing for, and in some cases, incentivizing more kids to get vaccinated.
Hoosier schools get to decide whether or not to require masks after June 30th. But while leaders continue to sort out health and safety measures for the months ahead, schools are also coordinating mass vaccination efforts for staff and eligible students. In Fort Wayne, a local nonprofit called SuperShot is offering kids a chance to get $500 for being vaccinated. Executive Director Connie Heflin says other states offering incentives are getting results.
In other states, immunization rates have gone up double digits due to incentives.
For now, the Indiana State Department of Health recommends unvaccinated people in schools continue social distancing and masking. But masks are still required for everyone on school buses. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Three Indiana teachers' unions are suing the state over a new law they say violates teachers' constitutional rights to free speech. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the law requires teachers to opt in every school year to have union dues automatically deducted.
The complaint filed in a federal district court states the new law would interfere in existing collective bargaining contracts between unions and school districts. Plaintiffs say the new authorization process will be an onerous burden on teachers, schools, and unions. Groups who advocated for passage of the contentious law in the General Assembly say it gives teachers more rights by allowing them opportunities for them to opt out of union dues. They also pushed for a provision, now law, that tells teachers in large, bold font they do not have to join the union. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Schools across the country, including some in Indiana, are reevaluating their relationship with police and school resource officers. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains, some people argue they play a vital role in buildings, while others say there are other ways to make schools safer for everyone.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation's board voted to disarm resource officers last month. School resource officers have condemned the decision, saying armed officers play an important role in schools as mentors and law enforcement. But civil rights and social justice expert Daryl Heller says even the presence of law enforcement can lead to criminalizing children's behavior.
And that just doesn't create the kind of environment that really encapsulates a fully safe environment for everyone.
Other school corporations are reviewing their use of police in schools, including in South Bend and Indianapolis. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The full impact of the pandemic on students with special needs is still unknown. But new data from the Indiana Department of Education shows a 16% drop in the number of students who were evaluated for disabilities last year. From Indiana Public Broadcasting, Lee Gaines reports.
Individualized Education Program, or IEP, evaluations must be completed for a student to qualify for special education services. Jenny Smithson is the Director of Special Education and High Ability Services for Muncie Community Schools. She says she's not surprised by the drop in IEP evaluations during the 2019-2020 school year.
With the governor ordering our schools to be closed through the end of June that year, and with everybody's fears with the pandemic and everything like that, I don't think referring their child for special ed was the first thing on parents' minds during that time.
A spokesperson for the Indiana Department of Education says school closures and a slight decline in overall enrollment contributed to the lower numbers of students getting evaluated for disabilities. With many students back in the classroom this year, the department expects those numbers to stabilize. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Gaines.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Hammond Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr.
Well, the Festival of the Lakes is coming back to Wolf Lake in Hammond. It's scheduled for July 13th through the 18th. And with us to talk about everything involved with the festival, we have Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. with us. Mr. Mayor, thanks for joining us today.
No problem, Chris. Thanks for the invite.
Well, we know that that most of the concert events that are happening around the country are going to require attendees to submit to a COVID-19 test or showing proof they've had been vaccinated before they go in. What is the city of Hammond dealing with the health safety of not only attendees for this five-day festival, but those people that work at the festival and the artists are going to perform? Tell us what the city has planned for its COVID-19 protections.
Well, I mean, we follow the state guidelines on COVID-19 protections, and, you know, for instance, I'm vaccinated. I was vaccinated earlier in the year, and, you know, I follow what the governor sets, and, you know, this isn't the largest get-together we've had in Indiana. If you remember correctly, we had the Indy 500 a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
With over 100,000 people in attendance. So the fest is an outdoor event. Obviously, we can social distance as much as possible, but during some of the larger shows, that'll be more difficult. But there's no, you know, requirement to show vaccination or anything of that nature when you come to the festival. And I went to a Cubs game last week, and although they urged people to get vaccinated, I didn't have to show any type of proof when I walked into Wrigley Field that I was vaccinated. So it'll be pretty much the same as, you know, other large events that are taking place around the country right now. It's, you know, I prefer people getting vaccinated. I prefer we do our part to help, you know, lower the number of infected people with COVID-19, but we're not going to require that as a condition of entry at the Festival of the Lakes.
I know there are always some things that people who attend Festival of the Lakes are asked not to do, the do not list, I guess, if you want to call it that. There aren't very many things on there when you think about it.
No.
We talk about, will you go down that list for anybody listening that wants to go for any of the events between the 13th and the 18th? What? Remember, don't show up at the parking lot carrying this or bringing this when you're coming into the festival.
Anything that could be used to hurt people, really. You know, we screen, you know, we're going to have 15,000 people at the Sammy Hagar concert. So, and most of the concerts are going to be crowded like that. So, obviously, we're going to screen people like you would at any large event before you get in there to make sure that anything you have, you know, couldn't be used to hurt other people, or even if it's, you know, innocent, like an umbrella. these things aren't allowed at any big outdoor events, and the Festival of the Lakes is no different. So mm-hmm. we will be screening everybody coming in, and you can't bring alcohol, you can't bring food into the venue. Things, it's just normal rules of any other events we're used to going to.
I guess you can bring one sealed plastic water bottle per person. That's about it, I guess. When you think about it, there's going to be plenty of food and drink there. So bring your cash, I guess. Bring your card with you and spend it at the festival there, except for that one bottle of water, I guess. So
we'll have dozens of food booths, and the food is reasonably priced, and there's a lot of competition, so they can't get too outrageous with their prices.
That's true.
You can walk 15 feet down and go to one of their competitors. So the prices are all reasonable. The food is amazing. It's one of my favorite parts of the fest is before I walk into the venue, I always grab a little dinner, eat it, and then I walk into the fest grounds. So.
Now, I'm sure that people are concerned mostly about the heat, about the sun. I guess I know a lot of people would bring umbrellas to be able to protect themselves from the sun, as much probably as that as for the rain. But if it is, I guess, if you need to bring something, or I guess there is one thing you can bring, I guess, you can bring a poncho, right? Or you can buy one there if you feel that you're going to get deluged on, and or maybe will help. I don't know if it helped keep the sun off that much, but it's certainly going to keep you dry, to be sure. So there are some
ponchos. Not a bad idea. I've seen a lot of people walking in with ponchos on, and unfortunately, it's an outdoor event in July, and unfortunately, every once in a while, we get a downpour, and some of those are some of the best shows. If I'll be honest with you, I remember Limp Bizkit, who's playing this year, played a show in the pouring rainstorm, and it was one of my favorite moments at the fest. The shows are rain or shine. It's not very often we just can't get a show off. It happens every once in a while, and the city does have insurance to cover us in cases like that. But, it's a rain or shine event. So I remember Boston playing in the rain at the fest. I remember Limp Bizkit playing in the rain at the fest. I remember Charlie Daniels playing in the rain at the fest. So keep in mind, just because there's rain in there, it doesn't mean the show is not going to happen.
And also, too, we should mention that you do have to pay for parking. There's no free parking, but it is just a reasonable cost that you have to make if you drive in and bring the family. So you just remember that you do have to pay for your parking when you're there. One of the other things I know that comes up and has been brought up before, people I know like to get the VIP experience pass. Will you kind of explain what that is and what it does not cover?
Sure. First off, with parking, that's how we make our money. It's a free show. Unless you choose the VIP experience. So, it's possible to go watch Sammy Hagar or Limp Bizkit or REO Speedwagon or, Los Tucanes de Tijuana free of charge. You won't be very close to the stage anymore, but it's possible. The only way we could really charge you is to charge you for parking. So if you have a van with, 4, 8, and 6 people in there, it's $25. If you have a person with one person in there, it's $25.
Right.
So that's that. And the VIP experience, we started about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a way where we prioritized the people that wanted to be right up on stage and the people that wanted to go behind the stage and people that want to pay a little bit extra for shorter lines to the drinks or nicer bathrooms, with less competition to get into them. So we started the VIP experience, and it slowly has trickled in, and it's to the point now where we're over $350,000 in VIP experience passes for the fest already. Yeah, so it's turned into a significant source of revenue for our festival, and we really prioritize the prime spots for the people to get this. So if you really want to get close to Sammy Hagar, you get the VIP experience. You're literally behind the stage. You can see him walk on the stage. You could go around to the front and watch him right from the from the front side of the stage, and it's a nominal charge. I think it's $75, something in that ballpark for a VIP experience.
Wow.
But you can still go for free, though, and you just aren't going to be behind the stage or right in front of the stage. You'll be 50, 60 feet back, which is still a great seat.
Now, will the pass give you an opportunity for a meet and greet with anybody that performs?
It really depends on the artist, I'll be honest with you, Chris.
Yeah.
Some artists are really great about meeting with the fans, and some artists are sort of jerky, and they don't want to meet with fans. So it really depends on the artist. But if you're in a VIP experience, you have more likelihood of being chosen for the meet and greet. And usually, on a typical night, 25 to 50 people in the VIP experience are chosen to meet the artist. It's always very competitive, though.
Oh, bad.
Very competitive. Literally, the artist is it gives you 25 passes and says, go pick 25 people, and it's not a fun job. I usually never participate in that job because I don't want to make people angry.
Yeah, that's true.
Only 25, yeah, 25
passes. That would be pretty tough not to, I know, to be sure. We're talking with Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. about the upcoming Festival of the Lakes. It's scheduled for July 13th through the 18th at Wolf Lake in Hammond. And if you will, kind of give us an idea about some of the interesting things that are going to happen each day of the event coming up.
Sure. Well, we added an extra day this year to celebrate our return from COVID. So we had a country night on Tuesday night. We have the band Old Dominion. Actually, really, the whole thing takes place the Saturday before. We have something called the Roadie Run 5K. Mm-hmm. We used to do the run right in the middle of the fest. So we moved it to the Saturday before, and we had the Northwest Indiana Sprinter Organization endorsed it and made it a Gold Cup race. So really, the fest starts on that day, Saturday before, with the Roadie Run 5K. Tuesday after that is Old Dominion. That's our, the earliest we've ever opened the fest, Tuesday night. So we're doing Country Night, Old Dominion. The next night is Wednesday night. We originally had the OJs scheduled, and the OJs had a health issue within their band, and they couldn't perform. So we got Busta Rhymes to open for Nelly, which is an amazing night with two great artists.
Wow.
Nelly's played the fest before. Busta Rhymes never played before, so we're excited about that. Thursday we have Limp Bizkit returning to play the fest. They played before, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago. They're great. They've done very well in ticket sales so far. Friday we have REO Speedwagon, who's played the fest once before about a dozen years ago. They're selling really well right now, and obviously they're from the Chicagoland area, so they have a huge fan base here. They're from Champaign, Illinois. Saturday we have Sammy Hagar in the Circle. It's our first time getting Sammy Hagar, and he's setting records already for ticket sales. There's people that think that they can wait till the last minute and get tickets to this show. They cannot. This show is on track to sell out very quickly. Yeah, I'm super excited about that. And then on Sunday is Latin night. We have Los Tucanes de Tijuana, which is a great Latin act. They have a star on the Las Vegas Strip, so they're a big act. They're selling very well also. And we still have the golf outing. We still have the Hot Rod and Custom Car Show. We still have, Special Persons Day on Saturday, the Fishing Derby, all the stuff we normally have, Polka Fest up at the marina, all the stuff we normally have. But those are the acts for the fest. And, of course, a carnival.
Oh, yeah.
All that. Yeah, it's a big event.
Will you tell us more about the carnival, about the unlimited rides, the wristbands in particular, because that's something people will find it's worth spending the money on, because that will get you a lot of opportunities to get the family entertained.
It doesn't make sense not to. I mean, unfortunately, we've all seen carnivals where if you want to go on a ride, it's, it's pretty expensive. The best way you can deal with this issue is to get the wristband. And I don't know what this is a deal we make with the carnival. The carnival gets probably 75-80% of all the revenue they make. So
right. They're
in charge of their little area of the fest, but it's always a great deal. I want to say it's like $50, $60, $70, something like that for a wristband. And then your child or whoever wears the wristband gets unlimited rides, which is by far the best way to go.
Well, it sounds like that is smart, especially if you have a number of kids in the family or relatives with kids coming in, and you're all going to show up for the festival for the entertainment later. It's wise to show up early when the weather's nice and ride the carnival rides and save money to be sure. It's going to be well worth the trip, I imagine.
And, Chris, you're giving great advice to your listeners, because if you get there, if you want to park your car during one of the concert events, they're going to charge you $25 to park. But if you want to come in at like 1 in the afternoon for your kids to ride the rides, nobody's charging. You can literally park for free, park close, and then you'd probably be leaving as everybody else is coming in for the concert, and they're all getting charged to park. So that's a good way to avoid the crowds and to avoid the $25 fee.
Now, if anybody wants more information in particular about any of the events coming up for Festival of the Lakes beginning July 13th through the 18th at Wolf Lake this year, where can they find out more information now?
Well, Festival of the Lakes has a great Facebook page with tons of information, Festival of the Lakes. And festivalofthelakes.com is a great website with a lot of information and ticket information. And like I said, the lineup we have for musical acts this year rivals Lollapalooza, or exceeds it, quite frankly. I think it's better than Lollapalooza, because I looked at the Lollapalooza lineup. I only recognize a couple of the acts playing this year. But, if people want to go see the shows and they think they're going to be able to walk in and, July 12th and get a ticket, they're mistaken. This is a highly competitive process, and there's a lot of people buying tickets. Like I said, we already have $350,000 of ticket sales and VIP experience. So we're doing really well so far.
Well, I know. I don't want to short Mr. Pierogi, but certainly this is a great way to do a lead-in to Pierogi Fest coming up later in the month, is to take advantage of the opportunity at Festival of the Lakes this year.
That's a great part of our city, and, you know, obviously Whiting's beautiful, and Robertsdale section of Hammond's beautiful, and 2 weeks in a row, it's really busy up in that up in those parts, but, you know, it's a great way to show off a beautiful part of our city, and I know Whiting feels the same, so... Yeah.
Well, Mayor McDermott, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the Festival of Lakes coming up at Wolf Lake on July 13th through the 18th, several days in a row. In fact, an extra day, as you say, added because of our recovery, hopefully, from the pandemic. And if the precautions are taken, the family makes sure that they're all safe and well and can make it in for the event. They're certainly going to have a great time, and they won't be disappointed. It sounds like you've got a great lineup of acts coming in to the pavilion there at Wolf Lake. Thank you for spending time to talk with us today about it.
Thanks, Chris. Nice talking to you.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.